You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining me today. We know what's going on in the geopolitical sphere. We have the conflict in Iran. We have things that are going on in the Middle East. Oil tankers that aren't going through, impacting, you know, gas prices and the like. Just my input on that, I think what President Trump is looking to do by escorting these tankers through that, that corridor is going to be interesting. And it's also going to ease fears because the tankers are not going through. They don't want to get blown up. That you have a tanker on the anywhere that big, you have an explosion and it goes on there, that turns into a big bomb, and that's not good. So I believe that there's going to be some sort of resolve there that is going to allow for the flow to keep on moving on. And I think the increase in gas prices, you know, gas stations in the U.S., they do that. It's ridiculous. It's like a phantom spike. To me, it's unethical. They shouldn't do that, you know, because oil prices, even though they went up, they can easily just come right back down. And if that is the case, you know, oil price can go up, you know, 5%, and gas prices go up, you know, 10%, 5%, whatever the case may be, and good luck with that coming back down, right? Quickly anyway, it takes a long time for that to adjust, but eventually it does. Anyway, I think that what we're going to see is some stabilization over the coming, you know, few days, next week, that type of thing. I think that's what's going to wind up happening there, because it has to happen. It definitely has to happen. You know, you have Bitcoin that was suppressed, and as well as the overall crypto market was suppressed because of everything that's going on. And the reality is right now, it's, you know, everything's exploding in a good way. You know, everything is moving back up, including, you know, gold, silver, you know, platinum. And I've said this many a time, with gold at, you know, 51.45 right now. I mean, I remember when gold was, you know, in the $600 range. That was many moons ago. But you know what's happening now? You have people that are looking to hedge. They're looking for stability. They're looking for a way for them to be safe. They're looking to be safe. You know, so look, the metals, you know, you have a limited supply of metals. You have more silver than gold, and silver being this high is, you have these metals that are utilized in processors and other mechanical items, so there is a need for them. So we'll see, but there's also a need for platinum and palladium as well. And I think, and I've been saying this since, you know, palladium was in the $900 range, that it's overlooked, as well as, you know, platinum and palladium, they're overlooked. So I think that's something to actually pay attention to. Okay, now what I wanted to actually do today is speak about something, and this is geared towards those that invest in nano cap and micro cap companies. I wanted to go over a few things that actually you'll see happening, and maybe you may not realize it, but maybe this will help you to look out for the signs to avoid getting stuck in something. You know, consider this risk mitigation, right? You're educating yourself to prevent any you know, potential issues with stocks you shouldn't be in. But anyway, you know, like nanocap companies, they're, you know, and microcap companies, you know, they often face a lot of limited access to traditional institutional capital. That's because, you know, they have liquidity constraints. There's volatility there. You have a perceived execution risk. You have, you know, market makers doing stuff. You know, you have a shorting possibility. You have all these things that are going on, and you have bad actors in the space. And this is what creates a lot of problems in that space. You have some great companies that are microcap that are really, they, you know, at some point in time they're going to burst at the seams. But when you have a market where you have market makers and other groups that can actually go in and create a problem trading wise, that is one of a number of problems that, you know, they face. Look, you know, a lot of these companies have limited access to conventional bank financing. And what that does, it pushes them towards some structured debt instruments, you know, toxic debt, convertible notes, you know, some private placements they really shouldn't be involved, but, you know, they have limited, you know, choices. But they can carry aggressive terms, okay? I've seen companies in the biotech and pharma arena where they're, you know, it's a very cash-intensive business where you're talking about clinical trials, development, you have timelines that can be long, and revenue is, you know, a lot of times non-existent. And it forces those companies to go down a road which I'm never on board with, though I understand why they're doing it, is survive or die type of thing, fight or flight. But they wind up getting involved in toxic debt. And typically that involves, you know, convertible notes, they're issued at discounts to market, and they have floating conversion rates that are, you know, you know, that's tied to the lowest, you know, trading point over a certain period. So if you have shorts involved and everything, you know, the game that can be played can be very damaging to shareholders. You forget about the company, the shareholders. Those are the ones that get hurt ultimately, right? This is what transpires. You know, when a conversion is not capped, you know, lenders, you know, they can go convert in large volumes of discount the stock. And then they wind up creating a continuous supply overhang that not only suppresses the stock price, it kind of gives shareholders and anyone that believes in these companies, they can feel defeated at a certain point. And I can get that. You know, some nanocap, you know, issuers, they take on short duration debt. Basically, it's like commercial paper. You know, they wind up getting involved in these deals, and it's due in 6 months, 12 months, that type of thing, 18 months, whatever. It's a short-term deal. But what happens there, those notes are high interest. You may even have a zero coupon for the duration, but you have a payment structure where you got to keep paying this down. So basically, you get the money, it's going out as quickly as it's going in. And if you think you're using all that money for working capital, you have to think again, because if you don't have it in line that you're going to generate, not forget about the revenue, you're going to generate the profits to pay back this loan, they're going to take more stock, more warrants, more things, and at the end of the day, they may even own the company. Okay, for a few shekels, they wind up, you know, getting the lion's share of things. And again, shareholders get hurt. So you have to look out when you see press releases of a company raising capital. They're promoting it. Oh, we raised capital. We took out, we have a loan, whatever the case may be, but they're not telling you the details. Look at the SEC website, look at the details when they file that 8-K and they file that information out there, because that is what's going to give you reality. And then you'll know what's going on. You'll know that, you know, this was done this way and these amount of warrants are here and this is what's happening. And then you're talking about having a reality check. Oof, you're going to have a reality check. You know, but when people begin to realize this, this is when the stock price is going to weaken due to this dilution. Okay, even perceived dilution. And, you know, and what's going to wind up happening most times, these companies, they'll have to go and finance again. And you're talking about further dilution following. You know, this is a financing spiral that can shift the management's focus from operating the company and executing to, again, being in the flight or fight or flight mode and its survival. And again, the company may have some issues. However, the shareholders are the ones that they're the ones that are buying the stock. They're the ones that pay the price. You know, the warrants, man, you know, when warrants are issued, that overhang is it feels like forever, and sometimes it is. You know, when warrants are issued as a sweetener to a deal, okay, alongside these debt placements or even equity placements, whatever they may be, it winds up, you wind up attracting the wrong players, because they'll do the deal, but they'll do it knowing that they're probably going to double, triple, quadruple their money in a short period of time. In some cases, depending on what they're doing, they'll do a lot more than that. And distressed nano cap scenarios, a warrant coverage, I mean, it can equal or exceed the amount of shares that are out there right now. Okay, or out there in the primary financing. It winds up being, again, this circle that continues to go on and on and on, and it feels like it's never going to end. You know, and at the end of the day, these companies wind up shifting. And it's interesting because, we've seen this throughout time. And it was, it I think it was 2017 in that range, or maybe 2016 in that range, where you had, you know, IC companies trading on the NASDAQ. All of a sudden, they're a blockchain IC company because they had to move where they thought they were going to get the most attention, but they weren't blockchain companies. You have a growing number of nanocap and microcap companies, particularly in biotech and pharma. In that arena, you know, they announce digital assets, treasury strategies, right? In itself, sounds like a great idea. In a lot of these cases, what's happening is that they're raising the capital to, not for their clinical pipelines or product development or for working capital, but to acquire these cryptocurrencies so they can build up the treasury. So they're making a deal with a treasury provider to buy the cryptocurrencies from them to fill the digital asset treasury. And in a volatile market, that's going to further hurt the company. Okay, you know, it's a strategic pivot from that's introduced, and it's a fundamental shift when it's introduced, right? The company is transitioning from an operational execution risk to an asset price volatility risk. Shareholder, you know, the shareholder value becomes correlated with the crypto market. So, you know, cryptos go down, this happens, the volatility is there, the stock is perceived as such because you're a proxy for that crypto. When the digital asset acquisition becomes the primary balance sheet narrative, then you're talking about a completely bigger story, because the company may effectively just be that proxy. Forget about the core business. Okay, they want to be a proxy because they have to go and continue on this momentum. And a lot of these companies don't understand what digital asset treasuries are. They don't understand the dynamics of it. They think they do, but they really don't. They have to, you know, the whole gambit of things needs to be addressed. And, you know, shareholders that are on the winning side with people that understand what is happening, those are the ones that are that are going to benefit. Okay, because there are a lot of things that come into play when you go and you make that shift, especially when you have these companies that are coming out, and it's funny. They're in biotech, they're in pharma. They say, well, you know what? We're going to go and launch a digital asset infrastructure strategy. Okay, what does that have to do with your core business? Are you in the biotech arena, or are you in the blockchain arena? Pick a side, any side, you know. So they have, you know, they're going and shifting and doing all this stuff. And again, to me, it's like smoke and mirrors. You're trying to survive and you're changing stuff, and you're changing why people invested in the company in the first place. And that's where I think a lot of problems will come about. I feel that's going to be. And you'll see it sooner than later when people that are getting smarter and smarter, and AI is helping with that, right? You're able to do some research and everything and find out more and more and learn. And that's really great. So you have investors that are learning more and more. So they're doing this and they're understanding more about how this works. And they're understanding these companies. They're blowing smoke and they're dancing around. Now, I'm going to stress this right now. You have companies that were made to be digital asset treasury companies. They understand what they're doing. Like Strategy, MicroStrategy, they understand what they're doing. BitMine, they understand what they're doing. These type of companies they're in this space. They get it. That's fine. They can be a slave to the volatility, but that's their game plan. And they're going to make it work. So that's different than a company pivoting out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, they're getting in the space of, hey, we're here. Okay, no, you're really not, right? So digital asset treasuries within itself are a great idea, but the execution is what matters. In my opinion, they need to be utility-driven. If they're not utility-driven, then really what is the purpose? Okay, because not all digital asset treasury strategies, are flawed. No way. Okay, the utility of it, that is the thing. When you create this infrastructure and you have a game plan and you're utilizing that to further what you're doing with your company, that's the key. Okay, so a company that aligns with experienced blockchain infrastructure partners, they're winners. They will win 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, no doubt about it. Because they have structured treasuries, they have defined operational use cases, they integrate digital assets into financing, collateral systems, they generate working capital through utility deployment, and they do all this stuff, and it's all positive. If it's done the right way, a digital asset treasury can serve as collateral for structured instruments like digital credit note tokens, for venture tokens and the like. It can enable project-specific tokenizing financing, which is repeatable, okay? It's not diluting the shareholders. Again, it can support venture or credit issuance without excessive equity dilution, without diluting the shareholders too much. And it can attract strategic institutional partners rather than short-term arbitrage capital. So you play the game, the long game, and it works out better. So a utility-driven framework, that infrastructure is key. Not all, I'm telling you, you may have a handful that do this, but a majority of the digital asset treasuries are not utility-driven. They may be driven to go gain yield here and there, but utility that you can utilize them to do other things within your business without jeopardizing your business. Okay, we can actually tokenize, project financing, as I mentioned, the digital credit note tokens. This is important because what you're doing, you're preserving the shareholder the shareholder equity value. Okay, because the question comes in, do you want to dilute your shareholders or do you want a strategic capital formation system in place? Okay, traditional toxic financing, usually you talk about transferring value from long-term shareholders to short-term players. And you're killing the people that believe in your company. And I'm talking to those companies that actually are doing this. Okay, the fact that you're doing it and you're knowingly doing it, that blows my mind. Okay, now what winds up happening with these models, again, with the toxic financing, you have more instead of the overhang is ridiculous. The increased volatility, depressed valuation, multiples, and so on and so forth, all this stuff comes into play. Because now these stocks aren't worth as much as they were before. Now, with a utility-driven digital asset treasury model, well, it's tied to operational use cases. You can enhance the balance sheet strength. You can provide collateralization capacity. You can improve capital efficiency, align financing with growth initiatives, and rather than going to the survival funding mode where you're killing your company. The key variable here is whether the digital assets that and the digital asset treasury is going to work for you or not. And it becomes a decision. So if a company is going to be reactive, they're going to go and jump into a digital asset treasury. They're going to get into these toxic situations. This is what they're going to do. If they're proactive, they're going to go do something in a fashion that is going to help the company and the shareholders and put it in line for growth. And that is the key thing, the growth. And I want to go over this because I was reading some news announcements. I was looking at some registration statements and things of that nature, some SEC filings, and I saw this stuff happening, and I needed to speak about this on this show. You know, because at the end of the day, if you're a shareholder, you want to make sure that the company that you're involved with, if they're going to get involved in the digital asset space, do it with an infrastructure that's going to help their shareholder value, not deplete it. And you want to look out for that. When you see that depletion, run for the hills, find a company where you can actually get involved with that has growth potential. Because those type of companies, I'm telling you, 10 times out of 10, they're going to hit a brick wall and it's going to hurt. They're going to fall down that tree. They're going to hit every branch on the way down. It's going to make a big thump on the ground. Okay, you have to be careful. Protect your equity. Protect your money. It's your money. Protect it. Okay. Anyway, I'm ending the show on that note. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And look, we'll be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps. And trust me, we're going to be speaking about other topics that are going to be of interest to you because I know you're listening to the show because it's going to bring value to you. I'm not doing this for likes. I'm not doing this for views. I'm not doing this for anything more than trying to help people to see what's happening and introduce them to how certain companies may work, certain, you know, cryptos may work, certain infrastructures may work, and the like. So on that note, I want to thank you for tuning in, and I'll be back with you, and we will be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps. Thank you. Have a great trading day.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio. In your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Velazquez and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.